this hour unto the best of our knowledge. Superheroes. But first, sure, superheroes can save the day by defeating villains, but can they stand up to the laws of physics? James Kakalios is a physicist and author of The Physics of Superheroes. When I got a chance to visit with Kakalios, I asked him the most obvious question. Can Superman leap tall buildings in a single bound?
Physics would say that it's actually not that impossible. At least the way Superman was first presented when he first appeared in June 1938. His powers then were ascribed to the fact that his home planet Krypton had a larger gravity than that of Earth. So just as our muscles and skeleton structure are adapted to Earth's gravity, when we go to the moon, which has a gravity only 1/6 as large, we can leap moon buildings in a single bound and, you know, lift moon cars over our head, which astonished the moon people. Superman, presumably coming from a planet with a larger gravity, is similarly stronger on Earth with our weaker gravity. And that was the explanation that was originally presented in the comic books.
I don't want to talk about Superman forever, of course, but mm-hmm. once you start, you sort of have to continue through a couple of these things anyway, because they're interesting. The X-ray vision, the heat mm-hmm. vision, the invulnerable skin. And I guess it wasn't invulnerable in the beginning, was it?
Yes. In the very first appearances, it was listed as nothing less than a bursting shell could penetrate his skin. So again, it was the notion that he was a lot stronger and tougher because he came from a denser and heavier planet, but he wasn't invulnerable. He could lift a car over his head, but not, say, a continent. And if you look at the strength levels he exhibited early on, asking how much force would it take to leap a tall building in a single bound, the force needed to lift a car overhead, and then work backwards and ask, what does this imply about the gravity of Krypton? The minimum excess gravity Krypton must have had is about 15 times greater than Earth. And that doesn't sound like that much, but it turns out to be surprisingly difficult to build a planet with that much gravity, consistent with what we know about science and the material properties of matter. You can build it, but it's hard to keep it from exploding, which it turns out is exactly what Krypton did. So obviously, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, these two teenagers from Cleveland, Ohio, who created Superman, obviously had an understanding of relativistic astrophysics far advanced than most scientists at the time.
Well, part of what's fascinating is that it sounds as though when they were creating it, they actually did try to take science into account, minimally, and not with the intensity that a physics professor would demand, but at least they were trying to think scientifically. After that, well, it was a success of the imagination.
Absolutely. Jerry Siegel, the writer of the early Superman stories and co-creator with Joe Shuster, was a real fan of science fiction pulp magazines. And at the time, those pulp magazines frequently featured stories of what we would call hard science fiction. Science fiction that it asked for one impossible leap of faith, and then everything else that happened in the story tried to be as accurate as possible and consistent with known science as possible. And so that was the philosophy. Even after Jerry Siegel's no longer doing this, in the 60s, you see a lot of comic book writers, especially at DC Comics, that are doing this. They say, well, if you could run at super speed, let's just grant that you could, but then you could do things like run across the ocean or up the side of a building or drag people behind you in your wake and catch bullets in midair. All things that the character who can run at super speed is shown doing, all things that are consistent with physics once you make that grant, that one miracle exemption from the laws of nature that enables the superpowers in the first place.
It's sort of fun to grant that and then yes. go on from there. And Flash
really
was the one who was always able to run up the side of sides of buildings, as I remember.
Right, right. The Flash was a superhero who, he was actually a scientist, a police scientist, who was alone in a storeroom when he was struck by lightning and doused with chemicals. And rather than suffering permanent neurological damage, he gained the ability to run at super speed. But he would frequently use his scientific knowledge when he had to solve whatever problem he faced in his monthly comics. If he, for some arcane reason, he couldn't directly touch someone, he could knock them out by dragging objects behind him in his wake and then ducking down, and they would continue on with their inertia and hit the person and knock him out. Or sometimes run so fast that he creates a sonic boom, a shock front, and uses that to knock the person out. So he would use physics with his powers in order to solve his problems of the month.
And actually, he'd have been a happy guest on Oprah, wouldn't he, because of what you call the Central City Diet.
Well, he certainly would. That's right. Because you could ask, how much would you have to eat to run at super speed? And it turns out to be an unphysically large amount, 500 million cheeseburgers, just every time you needed to run at even a fraction of the speed of light, which was nowhere near his top speed. So, yeah, so even chewing at super speed, it would be pretty much a full-time job.
Now, you actually have some personal experience with this, don't you? You were the physics advisor to the Watchmen film. Why did the Watchmen want to get the science right?
Watchmen, the film, was based on the DC Comics miniseries, a graphic novel that came out in the mid-1980s. And among comic book fans, Watchmen is considered, say, the Citizen Kane of comic books. And so in this adaptation, directed by Zack Snyder, they were trying to be as accurate and faithful to the original graphic novel as possible. So at one point I thought, well, what do they need me for? Because if I'm going to tell them that something is not physically correct, but it was in the graphic novel, and they had a choice between upsetting a million Watchmen fans or one physics professor from Minnesota, well, I know what choice I'd make, and I'm the physics professor from Minnesota. So, but what they wanted to know is, like, not only things, technical points, like how did a physics lab look like in 1985, what would it look like in 1959? We see Dr. Manhattan working on some equipment here. What do you think he might be doing? But they wanted to actually know how his powers might possibly work. This is a character who has quantum mechanical powers. And they wanted to know how this could function, because the production designer, Alex McDowell, said, we want to know what's around the corner of a long hallway, even if the audience doesn't go down that corridor. They need to make things as accurate as possible, because any moment that the audience is watching this and thinking, that's not right from a science point of view, or that's not what a lab looks like, is a moment that they're not paying attention to the story. And so it's in their best interest to tell a compelling story with a believable and realistic fake reality that they try to get the science as right as possible.
But still pretty fun. Even when the science is wrong, right?
Absolutely. I agree completely. And when I read these comics and when I go to the movies to see the latest superhero movie, I don't go with a pad of paper and a pen and a calculator, you know, Professor Grump, and say, ooh, my physics sense is tingling. But rather, it's more the case of when you see that they get it right, it's like catching an inside joke.
Well, it's a little like the way the artist should study anatomy before drawing the people. You want the them to study the physics before drawing the ramp.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Or at least put a little bit of an acknowledgement in there, or a little tip of the hat every now and then. There's this one comic that came out in the 80s featuring a DC comic superhero, the Atom, who has the ability to shrink down to subatomic size. And I mean, really subatomic. In one story, he and a friend are having a very private conversation as they sit on an electron. And at one point, the friend stops, turns to the Atom, and says, we're smaller than oxygen molecules. How are we breathing? And the Atom gives the only answer that he can. He says, I'm not sure. And then they just move on with the story and just continue on. But it was at least a recognition from the writer to the reader that, yeah, it's a comic book. Relax.
James Kakalios teaches physics at the University of Minnesota, and he's the author of The Physics of Superheroes.
Here I come to save the day. That means that Mighty Mouse is on the way.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.